The second reading is John chapter 1, verses 19 through 28. Please listen for the word of God. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. Thanks be to God.
So, hey, how are all those New Year's resolutions of yours coming along? We're about 2 weeks now into the new year, 2017, so how you doing with all of those new goals and those new intentions that you had in mind? Yeah, it's pretty much what I thought. Resolutions, why are they so hard to keep? How do we get so easily distracted, discouraged, disillusioned, and disinterested? Why do we lose our focus? Once upon a time in a faraway land, there lived a princess. Now, she was very intelligent, very articulate, very well-educated, and she was also fairly beautiful. So it's not surprising that she had a lot of offers for marriage. But none of these potential suitors were ever quite right for her because she wanted a man who she knew would love her more than anything else. Now, this was several hundred years before the televised drivel that we call The Bachelorette, so she had to devise a plan of her own, a plan that was far wiser. She sent out an official proclamation throughout the kingdom that on a certain day there would be a race, and the winner of that race would be given the chance to marry her. Now, this race would be open to any man. Things like power, prestige, power, age, wealth, these didn't matter at all. The only requirement would be that this man would love the princess more than anything else. So on the chosen day, not surprisingly, all sorts of men gathered at the starting line. They represented all different walks of life. And they were told the princess would be waiting for them at the finish some miles down the road. But then, I told you she was really smart, then just before the race began, the princess had another announcement made. Since she didn't want any of these men to run the race and not be somehow rewarded, she was ordering that some of the finest treasures from her part of the royal household would be brought to the road and placed along the sides during the race. Oh, there would be necklaces and rings filled with precious stones. There would be cups of gold. There would be swords of silver. And each runner would be encouraged to take all that he wanted. And thus the race began. But one by one, these men turned aside and they began to fill their pockets with the treasures and carry them off in every direction. They left the race, forgot all about the princess, all except one, who pressed on, ignoring what to him were mere trinkets along the way when compared to the princess and the deep commitment that he felt for her. And finally, yeah, he crossed the finish line, but he was the only one to do so. Only he was eventually victorious, and that was because he stuck by his resolution. He managed to keep his eyes on the prize. Now, whether or not they ever got married, I don't know, but I told you, she was really smart. Keeping your eyes on the prize is an old slogan. It comes to us out of the civil rights movements of the 1960s. And it's all about staying focused. It's all about staying centered. And there is a connection here to the second scripture reading we just heard read about John the Baptist. I think we forget that John had his own very successful ministry going out there along the banks of the Jordan River. He had these huge crowds coming out every day from Jerusalem to listen to him. He was baptizing many of them. He had his own circle of disciples that were following him. But John never lost sight of who he was. He never lost his resolve to play the role that had been assigned him. He never forgot he was the forerunner. He was the announcer of someone yet to come, Jesus, the Messiah. John always kept his eyes on the prize. Now, it goes without saying that you and I, we need to work on keeping our eyes on the prize. It's still very much an issue in our lives, even today. Especially during a New Year's season when we're making all these resolutions and failing to keep them. There's a couple named Al and Betty Johnson, and they live on a farm out in western South Dakota. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever driven through that part of our country, but quite frankly, there's not a whole lot out there. And they're on this farm about 200 miles from the nearest town, which is Rapid City. So whenever they go into town, they always make a very careful list of all the things they need to do, all the things they need to buy, the places they need to go. And they do this so their efforts won't be wasted in a long two-way drive, let alone gas money or time. So they make careful lists. Well, it seems that Betty's mother once flew into town for a visit. And Al drove those 200 miles into Rapid City to pick her up. And yeah, he made one of those very careful lists about all the other things he could do in the process of being in town and picking up his mother-in-law. Well, he made the two-way trip. It was long after dark by the time he finally got back, and he couldn't wait to tell his wife, Betty, about all the things that he'd accomplished in Rapid City. Oh, my goodness, he'd gotten new tires on the truck. He'd picked up different things for the barn that they needed. He'd found everything he wanted at the local hardware store. He'd even taken time to run over to the mall and buy her a new set of dishes. You can see where this is going, can't you? Right about this point, Betty interrupts him and she says, Al, where's my mom? And so it was revealed that indeed, in his determination to complete the list, Al had forgotten about the very thing he'd gone into town for in the first place. His mother-in-law was still at the airport. Now, I've always given Al the benefit of the doubt and figured it really was an accident. But at the same time, you and I know how easy it is to lose what's supposed to be our main focus. How easy it is for us to get distracted by things of lesser importance. We do it all the time. We fail to keep our eyes on the prize. So here's a thought for you in this year that's only 2 weeks old. Here's the thought. Do you ever realize that we human beings are the only creatures on the face of the earth who are conscious of time? Think about that. We're the only ones that make clocks, and we're the only ones that fill in calendars, and we're the only one that punch in appointments in our iPhones. Nothing else on the face of the earth does this, just us. We're conscious of time. Now, maybe that's a blessing and maybe that's a curse, because what it means is you and I can very easily calculate the fact that we have exactly 168 hours to live every week. It's the same for every one of us. Nobody gets more, nobody gets less. Doesn't make any difference who we are, doesn't make any difference where we live or what we do, we all get 168 hours a week. But how many of us here this morning, myself included, could stand up and say, hey, we always put that time to the very best use. We always live every one of those hours and every one of those minutes, every week, pursuing things that are truly important in our lives. The things that are going to make us better people, deeper people. The things that are going to make us more effective citizens or better parents or grandparents or more loyal students or employees. Really? My guess is that if you and I spent 1 hour each day in those pursuits, we'd probably still only be utilizing 4% of the total time we've been given. 4% trying to stay resolved, trying to keep our eyes on the prize. 4%. That's not very much, is it? And yet for most of us, quite frankly, 1 hour every day would probably be a step up from whatever we're doing now. Why? Because we are all so incredibly busy. I don't care what age grouping you find yourself in, our schedules are jammed with all sorts of things from early in the morning until late at night. And like Al Jolson at the airport, sometimes we get so busy we forget the one thing that we really need to do. Great story about a young man who had just gotten out of seminary, received his very first call. It was to this little church out in the country in a rural area, but now he found that he was out of the classroom and he was into the sanctuary. And he very quickly learned what every seminary graduate learns very quickly, and that is it's really hard to do a good sermon every single Sunday morning through the year. It's hard work. So what he did was a lot of seminary graduates do at first. You take a bunch of your old academic notes from classes and you kind of weave them into these dry intellectual lectures every week. Well, he did that, and this little country church was very understanding because they'd been sent other young ministers in a kind of a parade, you know, right out of school. And they'd learned what it was to be patient in the process of what it takes for a graduate to be transitioned into a pastor. So several months go by, and then early one Sunday morning, before anybody else got there for worship, one of the elders left a simple note for the pastor up on the pulpit. And on a small piece of paper, all he wrote was John 12:21. That's all it said, just the biblical reference, John 12:21. And not long afterward, the minister shows up too, and he walks up to the pulpit, and he's arranging his notes, and he's getting everything set, and he sees this little scrap of paper up there that says John 12:21. Well, he thought that was a bit strange, so there's a pulpit Bible up there, and he leafs through it, and he finds the passage, and he reads John 12:21, and it says, "Sir, we want to see Jesus. Sir, we want to see Jesus." The passage is out of an occasion where some Greeks had come into the city of Jerusalem and they'd heard all about this fantastic teacher, preacher, healer named Jesus, and they wanted to find him. So they looked up the disciple named Philip and they asked him where they might find this Jesus. And this was their question to Philip: "Sir, we want to see Jesus." But for this new graduate in the little country church, that had been the one thing that had been missing in his preaching. And that was the one thing that was needed. The congregation simply wanted to see Jesus. They wanted to hear about him. They wanted to learn about him. They wanted to figure out how they could more faithfully follow him as Christians in a 21st century that's very complicated with issues and problems. It's kind of a neat story, and I've always found it ironic that the people in the pew, not the preacher in the pulpit, were the ones who knew what the single most important thing was. And they were the ones who had managed to keep their eyes on the prize. The early phases of ministry, trust me, are a really learning experience. But the prize is our faith. The prize is getting and keeping God in our lives. The new resolution we make is to rediscover all over again how we can and should follow Him. You see, Christianity is not just about doing good. Now, doing good is a necessary part of our faith. And it's a huge witness to who we are. And I got to tell you, some of the best people that I've ever known are those who are always involved somehow in doing acts of love and kindness and giving and sharing and caring and missionizing. But Christianity is not just about doing good. And Christianity is not just about keeping commandments either. Does that sound funny coming from up here? But again, I got to tell you, the best people I know are people who really do keep the commandments, not just the Big Ten, but also the ones Jesus gave us in the New Testament that are far more important, I think, about loving others and forgiving others and letting go of anger. But again, Christianity is not just about keeping commandments. You see, Christianity at its very heart is about relationships. It's a relationship with God, and it's a relationship with others. Relationships then that are based on what we believe about Jesus Christ. I always think about this in terms of a cross. There is the vertical relationship that we have with our God, and there is the horizontal relationship that we have with each other. You put those two together and you have the cross. And you've also got the very essence of our faith. But you see, that's a truth you and I constantly have to redefine in our lives. That's a truth you and I have to constantly grapple with as the guiding principle of how we're going to live. And if that's the New Year's resolution we're going to make for 2017 or for any other year, then it's a resolution that we need to make every day. Every day, at some point or another, you and I need to look in a mirror somewhere and we need to recommit to keeping our eyes on the prize of faith. We need to rededicate ourselves every day, somewhere, somehow, as moral people trying to live in an immoral world, as ethical people trying to live in a very unethical world, as loving and caring people who live in a world that often is very unloving and uncaring. We're going to need to take that moment every day, somewhere, somehow, and restate that resolution that we're actually going to try to figure out in life's hard situations. Hey, what would Jesus do here? We're going to need to take a moment every day to figure out how we deal with bigotry and prejudice and with meanness and uncaring and with the selfishness in our world. How in the world are we going to handle the suspicion and the hatred and the deep divisions that keep us apart and the walls that separate us? Now, our faith can be the very source of that strength that we need. Our faith can change us, and it can change others through us. It can have an impact out there in the world. Sometimes it's real small, sometimes it's monumental, but it's an impact that changes something, somewhere, in somebody. But you see, in order to do that, in order to have that kind of strength, in order to affect that kind of change, we've got to keep our eyes on the prize and not get unfocused by the constant overload of false goals and material seductions and egocentricity and all those things that are always going to be present all around us. All of them begging for our attention and all of them demanding our allegiance. Somehow we need to be free of that. You're probably familiar with a very famous painting by a guy named Holman Hunt. And this is the one where Jesus is standing outside a door and he's knocking on the door. And if you know that painting, you may also know what I'm about to tell you, but it's a great story and it bears repeating anyway. What most people never notice about that picture is there's no doorknob on the outside of the door. There's no doorknob on the outside of the door. So there's no way for Jesus to get in from the outside. The door can only be opened from the inside, where you and I live. So here we are, inside, admired in our lives in the 21st century, lives that have placed all kind of obstacles between ourselves and that door. In that pathway between our Lazy Boy recliner and the front door, There is so much superficial noise and confusion and trivia and glitter and trinkets, so much that's so unimportant that it's really hard for us to get to that door because of all the inside clutter that exists in our lives and in our society. Sometimes we feel like we're living a life that's sort of like that TV show called Hoarders. Have you ever seen that? There's so much stuff blocking our movements inside. There's so much stuff that's cluttering up our lives. There's so much stuff that demands our time and attention that it's really hard for us to get to the door and finally open it. So we, like the men in that race for the hand of the princess, we cannot allow ourselves to become distracted by all the tinsel and the trinkets of the world as we try to search for the really important things in life and the vital things in our faith. It's always going to be incumbent upon those of us who call ourselves by the name Christian to keep our eyes on the prize, lest we lose our focus and become preoccupied with the mundane and sidetracked by the insignificant, and thus we find ourselves diverted eventually into life's dead end. Maintaining good resolutions in the face of odds like that, that's no easy task. We know that. It takes our constant attention and our constant reevaluation. It takes our constant resolution and re-resolution on a daily basis. Somewhere, somehow, looking in that mirror. But I'm here to tell you that I firmly believe that with God's help, we can keep our eyes on the prize. We can keep those resolutions, and we can bring positive changes, not only in our lives, but in the lives of those around us. And changes out there in the larger world itself. Amen.